Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Yo, what up? How's it going? It's your boy Heath, and I'm doing this intro, so listen up, or you can skip it and you can find out what it's about yourself. But if you haven't skipped it, today the dudes are talking to Brian and Amira Weller about growing up abroad as the offspring of missionaries. Listen up, enjoy.
The Fade to Gray podcast, and tonight, or today, or this afternoon, whenever you're listening, we're going to be interviewing two of my cousins, Brian and Amira Weller. We are related by our moms. My mom is their mom's sister, and so that's our connection.
Yeah.
I've known them a very long time. I'm the oldest cousin on that side of the family, and so I reserve the right to pick on all of my younger cousins, which means everybody.
Yeah, but
and Brian gives me.
So you'll be extra bossy this episode, is what you're saying, then, babe? Right?
That's exactly what you're saying.
Brian pushes back pretty hard, though, so I think we'll be all right.
Gotta stand your ground.
You always did.
Do that. Preach.
I get that from my mother.
We get it from our mothers.
Yeah, that's true.
And both your mothers then grew up overseas then? Is that the story? Because that's what we're talking about today, I guess, is the missionary life and what it was like. Either, I don't know if you're born there. I mean, it's your story. You tell us, and growing up there, and then now, you know, looking back, what do you think? You know, what do you think then? Some of your experiences, and now when you reflect, like, back now, what do you think? So,
well, my grandmother was born in Africa. My mother was born in Africa, and we both of them. Brian was born in Africa as well.
Yep.
So we've been around Africa for a little while.
Do you guys have dual citizenship?
No.
Africa's a big place. What area of Africa, region?
Amira and I, we were in Ethiopia. I was born in Egypt.
Nice. So
on the continent, most people call it Middle East, but yeah.
We were in the Horn of Africa, and Brian went to school in Kenya, and I went to school in South Africa. So we've been like sort of east and south.
Yeah.
Wow. What was that like?
Go for it, Amira. You start.
Oh, what was that like? What, growing up in Africa or going to school? Because for me, it was just good that I got through any of it.
Well, let's just talk about the school thing for now. I know that we all have very different school backgrounds. I mean, I'm just traditional public school. And Elizabeth, you know, was homeschooled the whole time. I know you guys have a whole mixture of schooling. And Chris is a teacher. And so that's kind of where we all lie on that. So we can talk about that for a minute. Talk about your experience. Tell us what it was like. Because if you were, what, in charter school the whole time, what would you call that, boarding school?
Boarding school, yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. We started out homeschoolers. Then we went to boarding school, Christian boarding school, is what Brian and I both did together. And then I didn't want to live anymore. I'm sorry.
Wow.
I quit. I quit school.
Yeah.
How long were you in charter school or border school?
Boarding school. That was my, for me, it was seventh grade, 13 years old. It's not a good year for anybody.
That's a tough year.
Yeah. Brian was in ninth grade. Yep. And then Brian actually went to public school in the States for a year while we were there. I did nothing, pretending it was homeschooling. And then we went back to Ethiopia. He went to boarding school in Kenya. And then I eventually went to a German school and then a South African boarding school.
Why so far away? Why did he go to Kenya and you went to South Africa?
I didn't want to go to any more Christian schools.
Okay. Yeah.
They wouldn't allow me in anyways, but yeah.
You were looking for Muslim schools, right?
Actually, no, I didn't look for that. I went to Harry Potter's sister school, which was good.
What is that, Durmstrang?
No, Kingswood College. Okay. It's a really old, I don't know, people in my class were there, like 7, 8 generations kind of thing. And I get my walk into the school, they set you up with a little trunk full of your uniform. You go to the store, pick everything out, walk out of the store. By the time you get to your dorm room, the trunk is there. So, yeah, just appears.
That's pretty crazy. It is a lot like Harry Potter. Wow.
Wish I had you on for the Halloween episode.
Yeah, for sure. Tell some stories. So, okay, so you're in South Africa and you're at this boarding school, right? So, like, what are the classes like? You're living there. So what is that like?
Well, I had to learn English first. South Africans are hard to understand sometimes.
Wait a minute. What language did you speak before that?
No, I'm sorry, I'm being sarcastic. I learned
Afrikaans?
English. Yeah, they had Afrikaans in the school, but it was an English school.
Okay.
We grew up speaking English at home, so American English was my background, basically. I went to South Africa basically just to finish school. That was my goal. Like, whatever you do, just get through it. And that was my choice. We actually have relatives that are South African that live in South Africa. So for me, it was a logical choice to go down there and still have like a connection to family.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, that was a big reason for my choice there.
And so let me ask you this. Why the aversion to Christian schools?
Well, I can be cynical all day long, but I think in 2000, when I was going through it, the school that I actually went to has a big push to make any of those missionary kids into future missionaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is kind of that's where they're leading their kids towards, basically. And so I really had a hard time with authority. I had a really hard time with learning Bible lessons in PE. I didn't think that made sense, and I didn't do it. I really struggled with authority because it just didn't come in a way that was loving and caring and actually met my needs and like my sense of justice towards other people. I struggled a lot because I watched other people go through things I never went through. So it was my sense of
justice. It was legalistic. It was frustrating.
So you're saying that even in South Africa or Kenya or Ethiopia, wherever you're at, they still had like a fundamentalist attitude in some of those Christian churches, Christian schools?
When I was in South Africa, I went to a school that they did chapel, but they weren't actually nearly quite so religious. They were so sports orientated. They would have worshipped your sports uniform more than anything that happened in chapel. And so that was a relief to me, because you do the requirements, but they didn't ask you to go beyond going to chapel on, what was it, like Wednesdays and Sundays. It was more difficult to keep up with the uniform requirements. but So for me, going to the South African school was a huge relief. It was a way for me to get my independence back. I'm a hugely independent person. And being in seventh grade, figuring out who you are and having a bunch of adults tell you you're doing it wrong, whatever you're doing it wrong, is very painful. So I checked out for a little bit and when my parents got me back to Earth, I ended up going to the boarding school in South Africa by my own choice. I chose it and finished up.
And so how old were you whenever you went to the boarding school?
I was about 16. And what happened in South Africa was I went from Ethiopia, which is the northern hemisphere, to the southern hemisphere, where they do school differently. So I ended up being pulled back another half of a year. So I didn't graduate until I was 19, and then I turned 20 like the next month.
Wow.
Yeah. But I made it to adulthood, and I'm good.
Did you ever get the oh, yeah? Did you ever get that spirit of rebelliousness rebuked out of you? Because
no.
What I'm hearing so far is that you're really, really rebellious. You're anti-God. You're, you're railing against your Christian upbringing. You hate missionaries. What's going on?
Well, that's probably a little bit brutal. What was actually going on was I never hated God. I just didn't know where he was. I couldn't figure that out. And, I really respected what my parents did. I was always told that what they were doing was really good. And I mean, you can't really argue with that when the whole goal is your parents are ultimately trying to help a culture, a country, a, you know, economy, a lifestyle, you know. And I don't know if they went about everything the right way, but I certainly know that, like, when I was with them, I believed in what they were doing. So being in boarding school, however, was more of a push towards my own identity and how do I respond to God. And I just couldn't connect by memorizing Bible verses. In fact, that's not just a personality thing. It is a personality thing, because I really struggle with memorizing. And the school that I went to didn't care. They just knew what was right, and I wasn't doing it right. So I pushed against, like, my capabilities versus what they told me, which was I wasn't good enough, which is not what God told me, essentially. So I was trying to balance that out, and you know, you're just fighting with authorities that are trying to please them, and they're actually, you know, I'm now 30, and I realized that half of my teachers at the time when I was 13 was 25, and a bunch of 25-year-olds teaching anybody is a bunch of mess. Yeah, I mean, you know, like, I was 25 a little while ago, and I was like, holy crap. Like, no, I don't know anything.
Yeah.
Sorry, I know you're a teacher. I shouldn't have pushed that button, but.
No, I wasn't a teacher until I was 28 years old, so. No, I agree. I agree. You don't know anything at 25.
You know, and that's what they did. They knew everything. And I couldn't condone, and most people in America won't, but this is something you can get away in Africa with, is just basic child abuse that, you know, I mean, like, I don't know, this isn't going to be great, but, like, some of the kids' punishment was either to pick up acorns for their break over and over and over and over again, go outside, pick up acorns, fill up a bucket, dump it out, go to it again. You know, like, we had that. We had people carrying desks around fields because they didn't do something. And I just couldn't get over that. I was like, that is not right. You know, like, I had a teacher duct tape one of the students' mouths closed because they wouldn't be quiet. I just, like, that doesn't fly here in the States.
Wow. Yeah. Sounds like you just had a very strong sense of justice and are, like, too smart for your own good. You know, couldn't keep your mouth shut.
Yeah. And that was, it did get me in trouble. Like, you know, if I didn't want to, I wouldn't. And that doesn't go very far with people who are making you do stuff. So.
Yeah. Or a very big case of Western privilege.
Oh.
I'm just messing with you.
Yeah.
It was a really bad joke.
That Chris is great with the bad jokes. I'm glad you're back, Chris. We missed you yesterday.
Sorry. So, Brian,
yes.
What was your experience like up in Kenya? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So my personality, a lot of it has to do with personality, because I'm surprisingly, Elizabeth, pretty passive. I let things bounce off my shoulder a little bit, and I say, you know what, whatever. So I saw the things my sister was going through at Bingham, which was the first boarding school we both went to.
Yeah, we were together.
And it made me angry. But I'm like, whatever, they're idiots. They can believe whatever they want to believe, and I'll just do my thing. You know, I didn't like getting in trouble, so I didn't like fighting against authority, per se, especially that age, ninth grade. But I had, once again, like Amira said, there was lots of things that teachers did. You're like, seriously? You call yourselves Christians and you're doing this? It's complete opposite of what you're supposed to be doing. And some of that you blame on the organization for, you know, oh, I'm there to be a missionary. I'm supposed to be an authority. I'm a teacher. You know, you get these mindsets of who you're supposed to be, and you play into that instead of just being a Christian and loving people, you know. You forget your whole purpose. And So boarding school, I had fun. I'm a people person. I'll talk to you all day long. But, so boarding school for me was a lot of fun. And I got to be away from my parents. So, you know, ninth grade. So, in a sense, you're going to college for high school.
Yeah.
You're in a dorm setting, whatever. You get told a whole bunch of rules, unlike college, and you find ways to break them. So the fun part was not getting caught. It was, you know, gives you a thrill.
I think I would have loved boarding school, man. That sounds like a blast.
It was, once again, for me, it was absolutely fun. We got into all kinds of trouble and mostly didn't get caught. So, you know.
And the thing about these Christian boarding schools, sorry to interrupt. Is that they've been going for generations. So they are generations of things that right. people think are normal happening. And now in the 2018, like it just won't fly, but it actually wasn't that bad. People thought that they were doing the right thing. You know, you grew up in the 80s and you think, oh, that was fine to lead your kids outside by yourself. Now we're like, oh, I got to look at them every 24 seconds. And, you know, right. I just, yeah, I mean, there
yeah,
was,
and a lot of the teachers were, had gone to school when they grew up mm-hmm. and they had the same horror stories. And then mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, you forgot what it was like for you.
Yeah.
Well, Brian, do you have any stories of some of the mischief that you would get in at boarding school? Do you have any, like, a good mischief story?
That you want to tell over the podcast?
Right.
Something like the story of Uncle Tim putting the phone booth on top of the building.
Okay.
You have some of those, right, Brian?
Sure.
The Statue of Limitations.
I would hope so at this point. Africa, they don't even care. You know, once again, like Christian schools, what's bad is not really that bad at all. And they blow these things up into bigger deals. I'd say the worst thing I ever did, and by me being, I don't know, worst thing, aside from drinking it, you know, ninth grade, which is legal because no one cared. In Ethiopia, we used to go get wine coolers all the time. We weren't allowed to drink, so dorm parents didn't know. And not a lot of people. We didn't tell a lot of people, obviously, because it was trouble. But, at 14 years old, we'd go down to the store and go get wine coolers. It looked like Kool-Aid, so like, oh, you're drinking Bacardi wine coolers. All right, great, it's Kool-Aid. But probably the worst thing I ever did was me and a couple guys, we'd go play. We'd leave the computer classroom window open, we crack it, and we'd go in there playing computer games at night. We weren't supposed to, you know, Red Alert, those great games from the early 90s, and eventually they caught on. Yeah, right. They eventually caught on. They started locking the windows. So there was two doors to the computer lab, and one of them, the hinges were set up so the door was locked, but the screws were on the outside. So we took a screwdriver and unhinged the door, left it locked, and we'd go play for 2 or 3 hours, come back and re-screw the door back and run out.
That's pretty awesome.
Probably the worst thing I did. Yeah. It was a thrill because, you know, you're in the middle, the building's in the center of the campus. Everyone can see. You have lights, so you couldn't turn the lights on. You're trying to hide the screen brightness at the same time. So yeah, it was fun.
It was
thrilling.
Like a blast. Yeah, it was thrilling. Yeah, trying to get there like a spa, like, you know, sneaking around in the shadows.
Yep. That'd be fun. Yep.
Did you guys ever go camel tipping?
Camel tipping?
No, I never did that.
Hyena hunting.
We had, Yeah, we hyena hunted. That was always fun.
With that, a rifle?
And by hunting,
no, that's not with guns.
In a vehicle with flashlights.
You go and chase them with a Land Cruiser. You sit on top of a Land Cruiser and somebody drives, and you just chase a herd of hyenas. It's actually pretty fun. Yeah. You don't know where you are. You're in the middle of a field, and you're just jumping all
bouncing
over.
All over the place.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Africa's a wild place. There's not a whole lot of rules.
Tell me about that African weed.
it grows wild.
It sounds like that'd be a good night. Just like twist up some doobies and chase some hyenas.
There were plenty of people who did that. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't do that either. I don't think I knew we knew it was there, but we just didn't really get into it. It was like, okay.
Well, once again, it wasn't forbidden, so I was like, okay, that's no fun.
You see, United States could take a page out of Africa's book here.
Yeah. Look at Adam and Eve.
Right.
Yeah.
What's the profit in that, though?
You gotta fill the prison system somehow. Anyway.
Of course, the for-profit prisons, right?
There you go. That's right.
Well, so you guys were in the African safari there. Did you guys ever like? And this is a really, really just easy question, but whenever you think of, or at least whenever I think of Africa, I think of lions and, you know, big giraffes and shit. So, did you guys ever like happen upon any of those animals in the wild?
So. Ethiopia, as war-torn as it is, most of the animals, most of the big game got run off, or else they were poached. Wow. So to see, like we had colobus monkey and vervet monkey bounce on our roofs every morning, hyenas at night, sometimes jackals. So a lot of animals know. When I was in Kenya, for zebras. Me, yeah.
Crocodiles and zebras and hippos are in the rivers.
Right. So I guess, yeah. So, like I said, for me in Kenya, it was we did water buffalo. We were in the middle of nowhere, so there was lots of animals around us. You know, the rugby team would go to the rugby field some days, and they would we'd have to cancel practice because the water buffaloes were in the middle of the field. And those animals are very big, and they are very very mean.
Hippos scare the shit out of me.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
You ever like do a baptism and then all of a sudden a hippo comes running up out of the water?
Oh my God.
I never saw that. That would be a good one though.
For who?
For storytelling.
For the hippo.
For the hungry,
yeah.
Hungry hippo. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it'd be like, a hungry, hungry hippo.
You know, the scariest thing for me was when it rained. I still get a little bit scared of walking on grass after it rains because in Ethiopia,
oh, I know.
The army ants just come out of the ground and you can't see them unless you look closely and the entire grass is just shimmering.
Moving, yeah.
And if you didn't look for it, you just stand in the wrong place and they swarm you. It is the most terrifying thing. I don't care how big an animal is. I'd run away from them way faster than a crocodile, hippo, or anything else. So I, you know, yeah. I don't walk barefoot in grass.
So you guys talked a lot about your experiences in school in Africa, but I mean, what were they teaching you other than, I mean, like, so it is predominantly Christian, so very fundamental, but like, were you actually like getting like other knowledge other than the Bible and have to memorize scripture? I mean, we were actually like,
yeah. Do you guys know like, anything?
So for me, both the RVA was a prep school for college, still considered prep school.
It's
so,
actually one of the number one countries, number one high schools in the world, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, there you go.
It's up there, and they hire, there's a lot of missionaries. They have a lot of big, we had one teacher who was, he used to be CEO of Opal. Down there.
Is it Skull and Bones? Are you Freemason?
No. But you know, there's a lot of talent, and they there's a lot of good information, and they make you think. So what the good thing about Christian schools is they make you think critically. It's not just here's the information, memorize it and move on necessarily. It's you got to work for it. So I think there were three people in my class who scored 1600 on the SAT. Wow. When it was 16. Yeah, like smart kids, and a lot of smart kids, a lot of smart teachers. There's, I like the system. So Amira went to hers was an English setup. Mine was. Were you all year round school, Amira?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't remember. Okay, so yeah, so which was nice for us because once again the diversity at the school. There was a whole bunch of us were Westerners, but you had Westerners. I had Australians who grew up in Yemen. I had Africans who grew up in the States. You know, other people from the Midwest and Congo kind of thing. Like you had all that diversity. And that was fun for me because I love people. I love hearing people's stories, and you hear all these different things and different experiences that you wouldn't otherwise hear about. You know, some kids would come back from break. So our system was, you know, 6 weeks on, 1 month off, more or less. So you got three months off across the year, but it wasn't all at once because there were so many people coming from all over the world just to come here. But, you know, you have kids come back from break and go, oh, yeah, my friend walking through a field in Congo from the Civil War, and he blew his leg off, and yeah, that was my break. So you hear all these different things that you wouldn't normally hear in the States.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know? Just stepped on an old landmine that never got cleared.
Right, from 30 years ago. Yeah, I mean, and the practice was you send your herd of cattle across your field before you plow just to make sure they step on it first. But if they miss one, then, you know, it's you.
Dang, that's farming to another level.
Right. But that's what you got to deal with. You got to deal with people getting blown up just trying to survive.
So did you experience, I guess that was 30 years prior to when you were there, but I don't guess you guys were any, you were in war-torn areas, but did you guys experience any violence or, like kids with AKs, things like that?
Well, you know, I mean, we kind of joked about having Americans get snow days and we get riot days.
Right, yeah.
But, I mean, honestly, like in 1977, when my mom and Elizabeth's mom had to leave the country, Elizabeth's mom actually left before that, but that was when the a huge war broke out, and when Brian and I moved to Ethiopia in 1994 with our family, it was still like under communist like
mentality.
An environment, yeah. And right. So seeing people with guns was not a big deal. We kind of always joked we didn't know if they actually had bullets, but you know. You get used to military. You get used to being searched for every little thing. You know, just going to the grocery store, getting searched, kind of. And you know, and
people
so
people were all inside by 7:30 every night.
They were
because they were used to the curfew. They were used to if you're out past then you get shot. Now it's not that way now, but it used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going back to your question, do you mind if I go back to that educational question?
Yeah, definitely.
You asked what we learned in school. One thing I do remember, which is actually a good thing about the one school, the first boarding school that we went to, was they put a lot of altruistic motives towards the things that we did learn. So you did, we had Bible class in the morning, and then you did science, and then you did math or whatever. And we would do those things. You get your homework done and stuff, but then we would have like outreaches, which, you know, has a motive behind it. But for me, it did teach me how to be sensitive to the world around me. We would do things like, instead of eating our own lunch, we'd pack a lunch fast for that lunch and then go give it to people on the streets who actually did need it. And so I am kind of grateful for that.
Yeah.
Awareness of, you know, of what's happening in our world instead of just simply learning the facts, the figures, and moving on, you know.
Yeah. I've often wondered what Christian science class would be like, though.
They teach you both, and that's what I like. Is like they say, here's what evolution teaches. This is what we believe as Christians. You need to know both sides. So, I mean, they're obviously going to push the Christian side, but they teach you both.
They did.
This is what you'll see out there. This is what we keep.
Sounds like you guys had different experiences there.
Oh, big time. Yeah. My school, well, we did.
More people went to Brian's school, apparently, is what you're saying.
Oh, hang on a minute.
He was saying like 1600 on the SAT.
Yeah, I got through it. Okay, let's just go there.
Tell us about it.
In my school, we did schools differently, and so I actually didn't have to do science as a subject. I started with a biology class, and then I was like, not happening. I did computers instead. Which meant I learned how to use Excel. Anyways, but yeah, I know that they did teach evolution there because biology teacher there was pretty adamant about teaching evolution, and it wasn't in high school. They didn't really care as far as like lining up with what people at chapel said. They were just like, just, you know, got to get through the class, and that's what they taught. So we learned it. Yeah.
Very nice.
I mean, that was a Christian schools. I went to public school in Atlanta. That was a fun time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tell me about that. Yeah.
Going from a strict Christian school like Bingham Academy in Ethiopia to Atlanta public school, where there was 1,600 people in my class in 10th grade. You know, I met probably 30 of them. Yeah. But you'd be sitting in class and they were working on the fire system for a while, so people pull a fire alarm just to go out to smoke weed. And, you know, you see comms behind the doors. You'd hear moaning through the ventilation system because they were in the boiler room. Like, all right. You know, people talking about how they stole their parents' credit cards and were buying porn or whatever else. It's a world of difference.
Like extreme culture shock then. I mean,
yeah, a little bit like, oh, okay.
There's culture shock, and then there's like, this is what they – told me the world would be like, and they're not wrong.
Right, and they proved me right. All right, so they weren't that far off.
Is that some of the things that they would tell you, like about America or about the United States in African schools? Like, what was that like? How did they portray the United States?
Wow. Well, I remember when we first moved to Ethiopia. Speaking of African schools, I remember, what was it? Dad came back from one of his. Dad was a Bible school teacher, and one of the first questions they asked him was, "So, what's slavery like in the States?" Like, they were still teaching that U.S. had, yeah. Once again, from communist, you know, propaganda, but it was one of those things. Like, they still thought we had slaves. You know, no, that was done a long, long time ago.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
But when you're sheltered, you only know what you get hold of. And unlike the States, the government controls the media.
Probably, yeah, I would say, too.
Yeah, but, I mean, what, we just, Ethiopia basically got the internet 15 years ago, at best.
Yeah.
So we got a phone number 2000, our phone number is 05.
Yeah.
your phone number was two digits?
Yeah. There's only five phones in the town.
That's blowing awesome. My mind. Wow.
Yep.
I guess I didn't realize that Ethiopia was that behind the times. That's interesting.
Ethiopia is a very interesting country to begin with. Its history is rich, beyond rich. And I don't know, the economic war that's going on right now between the U.S. and China. China's buying up Africa left and right, and we're trying to keep up with them. And it's very interesting. China obviously has to keep up with their infrastructure, so they're paying for all of Africa's infrastructure in exchange for natural resources. So Ethiopia has been built up much more than what when I was there. So internet is a bigger thing, and everyone has cell phones now. And
they got their first female president. That was pretty progressive.
Yes, wow. Saw that too.
But that wasn't recent though, because they've gotten a new president now, don't they?
No, I mean that just happened in the last.
No, that just happened the last like week, didn't it?
Oh, okay. It was
very recent. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Their president resigned. He said, which is also unheard of, you know, said, hey, I can't do anything else for the country. someone else needs to take over.
Granted, they have a president and a prime minister. So you're
okay. That was confusing me because your mom was talking about the prime minister then that was making big changes and healing relations between borders and various things. That was the prime minister then?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Doesn't Ethiopia have issues with Eritrea?
Eritrea. They actually officially, with this new president, officially stopped the war. They were no longer at war with Eritrea.
The biggest thing was that Eritrea was a territory. You know, there was their own county, whatever. And when Ethiopia wanted to recede from Ethiopia, they lost access to the ocean. So that's why Ethiopia fought so hard to keep that, because now Ethiopia is a landlocked country.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
A lot of money. Yeah,
that's a game changer. Wow. Well, no wonder. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, let me ask you this. Is the stereotype of African cultures, like the way that they treat women, is that something that you guys saw to be true over there, that they treat them as inferior? I mean, I'm hearing that Ethiopia now has a female president. I think that's pretty progressive, but like, do they still have the mentality? I guess not, if they would have elected a woman president.
The cities are always going to be different than the countryside. One, because you have more information coming into cities, and that's what cities do. They bring in people, they bring in ideas. So yeah, your cities probably are going to be less of that mentality, but in the countryside, it's still going to be more. Women cooks the food, raises the kids, men go out to work. So, and part of that is survival. I mean, that's, sometimes it's just the way it works. You know, men have to go do the field. Women don't want to plow fields. If people realized how hard it was to plow a field with two oxen, they would probably be shocked. Like, oh no, you actually have to put some. You might look like you're riding on the back of a plow, but you're still putting a lot of effort into it. It's not an easy job to do. But I mean, and that's once again, you're using crude tools, and you don't have tractors for the most part. Rich people do, but you know, that's far and few between.
So I hear you saying that women are incapable of doing that job.
I didn't say they're incapable of doing that job. I said they wouldn't want to do it.
It's physically demanding. I mean, I don't know that it's not like they're just sitting around. I mean, if you look at women in the countryside that we grew up in, they are hauling water for like lots of miles, you know, and that's what they do every day. And you do it when you're 6 years old and up. I think they have a long way to go before they're actually, you know, very far, like, I feel like they have a long way to go. I do respect that they have a female president, but I mean, I know that's different now, but when I was growing up as a woman, I wasn't actually able to make friends as a kid because, long story short, I have four siblings. Older brother is a boy, me, and then younger brother, obviously a boy, and a younger sister. When we arrived in Ethiopia, it was 9, 7, and 5 and almost 2. Brian and my little brother would play soccer with boys. My little sister was a baby, so she'd play with the other babies. And I was 7 years old. And that is not the age you go and you let anybody run around when you know how many cows they're worth.
Is that marrying age?
Yeah, they didn't do that. It wasn't quite as common, but it was definitely working age. And so girls were working in the house. And I wasn't going to be playing with anybody.
Were you ever afraid of getting kidnapped and being forced into labor or anything?
Well, I don't think I would have known what they would have done. It wouldn't have like occurred to me. But yeah, I knew that it wasn't safe to leave the property.
So that was an actual threat, something like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, the other problem too is with us, we were the first white kids to be there in 20 plus years. So, you know, just walking down the street, you can ask Elizabeth, I had a bowl cut. I had long blonde hair and everyone wanted to see what it was like to touch blonde hair. You know, how's your hair feel different than my hair? And so, in a sense, we were all if it was in the States, we could have all claimed harassment one way or another. In some degree, sexual harassment, you know. But it's just, if they were curious, and we had to put up with it until they got comfortable with us. And so it made life interesting for all of us, I think. But yeah, Amira's right, though. It is a little, being a girl at that age, they were directed to help their mother. Like, their mothers wouldn't let them out of the house. It was expected that they help learn how to cook, sleep, do all the chores around the house, keep the house clean and whatnot. But,
so, yeah, I don't know. Just a little side note, kind of interestingly, my younger sister and I just had a little chat a couple years after we had moved to the States. And just between the both of us had to realize that we actually taught ourselves to look up when we were walking down the road, because the harassment and the calling, if we were walking down the road as like a high schooler, we actually lived in the city, and you just walk down the road, get some bread or something, and we walk with the dog. You don't look at anybody. You don't understand them because you don't want to. And then coming to the States and realizing, no, I actually can look somebody in the eyes, and that's expected, and they're not going to like undress you while you're standing there. Not that guys here don't do that, let's be honest. But in general, my sister and I both had to, we both realized that we had to learn how to like earn confidence. Like, we had to teach ourselves to do that.
That's really interesting. And you said that you had to pretend like you didn't understand them. Do you speak Amharic?
I don't speak Amharic as well as I speak Oromifa, which is the language we grew up in.
Okay.
I was in boarding school most of the time when my family lived in the city. So, and I mean, I hate to portray Ethiopia like that. I don't want to give them that view. I don't know that that's 100% fair. It is my experience, so.
I'll say that I.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. I mean, you made that comment about looking down. I didn't realize that. I did that too, actually, because you didn't want the. If you looked up and they saw you, then they start calling you, and yeah. Saying whatever. I looked down for a long time. Because it was just easier to avoid the eye contact.
Wow.
Till Dad started yelling at me for not looking people in the eyes.
Oh, were they asking you guys for money like they did when I came to visit you guys?
Yeah, they offer everything, money and, you know.
Half of it's a joke, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because I remember, teasing one time because I was feeling as if it was a joke as well. I don't know if we pushed too hard and I was being stupid, but I claim the fact that I was only 19, so.
The thing with Ethiopia is, you have, because it's poor, quote unquote, they every aid organization in the world's there. The UN's there, the African Union's there. And so people can make more money begging than they can actually getting a real job. You have Catholics that give, you have Orthodox, which is the state religion, required to give. You have Muslims that are required to give, and then you have the Christians that more or less are required to give. And so it's easier to sit there and beg than it is to actually get a job. And parents would do horrible things to their kids just to make it legit. They could cut limbs off. They'd inject them with stuff to the hand would be like 20 times the size. Oh yeah, they gouge eyes out even though they were perfectly healthy. Yeah, absolutely.
That's ridiculous.
That is. It is terrible. Ridiculous.
But that's the culture, and that's the way it was. Like, because they figured out, Westerners figured out which kids actually needed help and which ones didn't. Like, one of the thing is, if you had shoes on, you had money. So, like, oh, okay, you're just trying to scam me. Get out of here. And then so they're like, oh, well, he was making good money, or she was making good money. Now she's not. All right, come here. So they do stuff to the kid because. Everyone falls for kids. How can you not? They're innocent, you know?
That is some really sick shit.
Yeah.
Like, they would gouge their kids' eyes out or cut off limbs?
Absolutely, yeah. Oh, or cut them up severely so they had to go to the doctor and get it amputated anyways, but yeah.
That is just insane.
Yeah.
Do you see a parallel between that mentality of, like, if I just beg, then I'll get more than actually going out and earning my own wage. Do you see a parallel with that? And like, how do I say this sensitively? The left and the liberals here in the United States, and how they want to just give handouts to everybody and, you know, take care of everyone. Do you think that that's where we're headed with that mentality?
You know, there's a really good book called Where Helping Hurts, and it really hits on that point. Can't remember who the author is, but they talk about like the handouts and what that causes. And I mean, it is if you have a 5-year-old, keep handing them cookies without giving them responsibility, and you're not going to get a great kid. It's not like dream science, but.
I was going to say the same thing, Amira. Even with my own life, when someone gives me something, the how I care about it is far less than if I had to actually earn it, had to go out and get it.
We saw a lot of that in Alaska too. With all the permanent fund dividends and stuff, and the dividends for the First Nations and stuff like that. Like a lot. I mean, it's not that I don't agree with like dividends, but it was one of the things that it was enough money to survive off, especially in a place where you can live off the land, to not give you enough motivation to actually possibly better yourself, you know, and use the money for school or something. You just use it for like 4-wheelers or toys, or, you know, like that was just the mentality of once, because it's free money. You didn't earn it. It was just given to you. So,
you know, and coming from a biblical perspective, it's, you know, God says, through your trials and tribulations, you'll grow in your faith. It's kind of the same thing. If you're never knocked down, you never know how to stand back up. So if you're given everything, then what's the point in saying, I can sit here. You can just keep giving me everything I need. What's the point in moving?
So speaking of that, and coming from Ethiopia, and then you say going to school in Atlanta, were you in school in Atlanta too then, Amira, at the same time? And what grade would you have been in?
We don't know. I lived in Atlanta, but I was quote unquote homeschooling. And then we left, and nobody knows what actually transpired that year. I just faded in and faded out. So no, I didn't. I was not in a good place in my own head at that point. So I stayed home.
Did you do so when you left back to Africa?
Correct.
And then you did more. Okay. So you did all of your schooling then was overseas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
So we may need to explain your parents would work in Africa for a few years and then come back to the States on a furlough.
Correct.
To do fundraising and tell the churches that were sponsoring them, like what you guys did. And you also got to come back once in a while for family time, right? Like to see us, because there was a good chunk of our growing up years that we didn't see each other. However, there was some times when we did see each other after, what was it, 1994, you said?
Four.
You left? Yeah. 1994. So we may need to just clarify that too.
Our parents in when we left Ethiopia in 1994, the way they did it was 4 years on the field and a year off the field, and then 4 years off on the field and a year off. I'm pretty sure that was so they did. Yeah. I know it's changed since, so that my parents now come every 2 years. But when we were in Atlanta for a year, my dad was actually in school getting his PhD, I think it was
master's.
He was in school at a seminary there, and they weren't actually sure if they were going to go back to Ethiopia at that point. So that's what ended up happening. But that was a year kind of off for them.
So both of you guys are full time missionaries now, right?
Yeah, we're a full-time missionary. I live in Hollywood. The real thing.
Well, hey, that would be the mission field, right?
Yeah. It's a pretty interesting place to be. That's not a lie.
How did you end up in Hollywood?
Jesus did it.
She just Jesus duped you.
Yeah. Chris is an atheist.
I'm not an atheist.
Oh, I'm agnostic. Sorry, agnostic.
Well, I never thought I'd get it. LA. LA is one of those places you only go to if you're pretty or talented, and let's just left that. But
and well, she's that's both.
Not nice.
No, yeah,
that's unfair. Myself. That's unfair. You can't say that.
I've never been in.
Brian, keep your mouth shut.
For everyone who's listening right now, she's very pretty.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you. You know, I can't.
Her phone number is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything yet. And single, yes.
Yeah, well, let me just tell you, I was thinking about putting a single tape across my forehead as my Halloween costume, because in church, that scares the boys like you wouldn't believe.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so anyways, I'm in Hollywood now, and I work in production, doing stuff.
I still have no idea how you got to Hollywood.
Oh, so I went to Bible school.
Plane.
What's that?
Oh, flight, plane. Yeah,
normally. Yeah.
American Airlines.
Yeah, I moved to California in 2015 to go to a Bible school in Northern California. And after 2 years of going there, long story short, I was assuming that I just stuck around there, but it turned out that a movie came up to that little tiny town, and they called me in just to help out. It's going to be like a little assistant on the set. And by the end of the movie, I was the second assistant director, so they told me to come down to LA and work. So I do that.
That's badass. That's awesome.
Yes, wow. It is very badass.
So do you, I guess you enjoy the work, otherwise you wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, it's a freelance job. So, you know, it's faith-based. Always looking for the next one.
Oh, so you're doing faith-based films.
No.
She works with Kirk Cameron. She's
his assistant. Yeah, that's, No. I hear Jesus more often than you'd believe in church, but it's not the same direction. I'm actually right now in the bottom of the ranks. I'm a production assistant most of the time. Sometimes every once in a while I get a second assistant job, but I'm still learning the ropes because Hollywood is actually very proficient business. They really know what they're doing, so you do earn your steps up.
Sure. What have you worked on? Anything anyone would know?
Not anything I can tell you about. Seriously. No, you'll see some things coming out eventually. I'm going to put my name on them.
Porn sets.
No, I don't. I don't know where they are.
Are we allowed to say the one that you and I were talking about, Amira?
Which one?
Our friend did. My friend's.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That one's out. That was the NYX professional makeup award ceremony that we worked on. So the producer there, I was working for the producer on that one, and it was a they have six contestants who are Facebook or YouTube kind of makeup tutorial finalists, and then they get their last look, and our production company made their final looks and their what do you call them, montage videos, like the ones that come up on the screen at the award ceremonies that say this is what they did. They show it. It's beautiful. It looks really great. And then one of them wins. So that's what we did about 2 months ago. I just worked on Jodie Foster's Get Out the Vote. That was pretty cool.
Did you get to meet her?
Yeah, she's good.
That's cool.
So, it was Jodie Foster. You'll see, I don't know if you're in California, but basically it's promoting getting out and voting. And it was a 85% female cast and crew. So that was super That's progressive cool. in Hollywood, which is really cool. A lot of really great people, and it's just really fun. So it's a lot of hard work. A lot of hard work.
Sure. I mean, you probably have to, make your way, and you're trying to raise up in the ranks. So you're like taking whatever job you can. And I imagine that's got to be tough. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a friend in, I don't know if it's North Carolina or South Carolina. I guess that makes me a pretty bad friend. But we grew up in the same town.
It,
I'll just
it
say
pisses
that.
Us off too, if you're from that area.
Yeah, right? I'm sure it does.
If you get it wrong.
There's a big difference. I'm pretty sure it's South Carolina, but I have a friend who's a colorist. Works on film too. Yeah.
Works in a cool studio. Eats a lot of things. I don't know. They have some of these really awesome post studios where you go in and you work on your post projects, and yeah, they're really nice.
Yeah. Well, what about you, Brian? Where did you end up?
Well, so I came back to the States in July of 2004. Pretty much got dropped off and left to fend for myself.
Yeah.
I went to college for about a year. No, it was only a semester. I got fed up with Americans and their culture and their ignorance. And I said, I'm going to join the military and go see the world. And
so, whoa, hold up. What do you mean by Americans' ignorance and culture? What are you talking about?
This would be a long conversation.
We're very ignorant to that because we're Americans.
We got time.
So, yeah.
So,
we got time.
So basically, for me, yeah. Once again, going back to everything being handed to you, nobody actually understands the politics that they are in. Nobody understands that people are suffering down two doors. No one even knows their neighbor anymore. We've gone so far to being such extreme individualists that we completely forget that we have a community around us, and we don't care about anybody but ourselves. And that's whatever secularism, but it was irritating to watch people who called themselves Christians care strictly about themselves. And people don't know how to have a relationship. Like something simple as truly asking someone how you're doing and what. I've had so many friends where I start getting deep in it and they walk away because they can't handle going deep. And like I shared earlier, being in a place like Kenya, where we had people from all over the world in one spot, you didn't know if you were going to wake up tomorrow morning. So you went deep, you went deep hard, and that's the community I grew up in. So going from that to what I perceived the shallowness here was really, really frustrating for me. And honestly, it was really depressing. It didn't help. I was in the north where, northwestern Pennsylvania, where it's cloudy 90% of the time.
And it never had in our home. So.
Yeah.
Used to sunshine and good weather.
People wouldn't talk more than superficial. It was all superficial conversations. How you doing? I'm doing. Oh, I'm doing great. Well, clearly you're not. You're just crying over there. You're not. You're not fine. What's really going on? Oh, I don't want to talk about it. You don't care, anyways. No, I do care. Let's sit down and have a. And that's who I am too as a person. I care deeply about people, so I pursue them. Where most of people don't pursue, being in the military now, we hear the statistics all the time about suicide, and it's people just don't ask. Half the time people don't ask. The signs are there for a lot of them, and it's nobody takes the time to actually. I'm busy. I got stuff to do. We're so busy with our lives, we don't have time to stop and look around for this, and see what's going on. That's still irritates me to this day, but. I guess that's my experience, and that's where I was going with the American ignorance. There are so many people that need help physically, emotionally, spiritually. We don't even take the time to see where they're at. I just say, "Hi, how are you?" It's so easy to do, and we don't even do that. So,
I agree. That's really one of my passions too. And it's hard. It's like almost like a bumper sticker society. You know, everyone just wants to get their opinion out. You know, no one wants to actually like hear and listen and allow their inform their opinions like, as they go. You know, it's like everyone's too afraid to, you know, like be wrong. It's almost like a competition. Everything's made out to be like you know, us versus them, me versus you, you know. And if you're not on my team, then I'm gonna have to like, you know, defend my team fiercely. Even if I don't necessarily agree with these points, like I still have to win one for the team. And so I'm with you on that. We could talk about that for hours for sure. But that was enough. Just like social interactions then were like one of the main things that were enough to be like, I don't really want to do school here in the States. I don't want to do this. And so you figured the military then was going to be like the solution just because you wanted to travel more, because it was a free travel, is that how you saw it? Or like also was it the thing of justice also wanting to like fight for, because I mean, you're wanting to fight for a nation that obviously is irritating you. You'd much rather be anywhere else, but you still want to fight for it. So talk about that.
The thing I found in the military was that when you travel, you have different experiences. You're not just, you don't just understand your hometown, you know, politics. You actually understand that there's a bigger world outside of your little town in Western Pennsylvania, Eastern Ohio. And I had experiences outside of the U.S., so I could relate. And it was a lot easier to relate to people who knew something other than just the U.S. and could have different experiences, different ideas. And, you know, you could be a Republican per se, but you still have some leftist viewpoints on a certain thing. You didn't have to be set on one track. It wasn't one track. Like you were saying, I'm a Republican. I have to spout out all Republican talking points. No, you can have a partially different opinion, you know, you can understand a different side, you know.
But you chose military over like, say, yeah, why not do you be missionary? I mean, that was your experience. So is that, it was almost like,
that's what I did.
You're right. You did do that.
You just need more action for what you needed.
One was the travel. Two, they were going to pay for school. And so my goal was I wanted to be a missionary pilot. I still do to some extent. I want to be a pilot anyways. Missionary pilot would be fun. Bush pilot.
Yeah.
But so yeah, I saw that as an opportunity. I was part-time for the first 5 years. And then I got tired of having to remember what my job was 1 week in the month, 2 weeks out of the year. So I'm going to do this full time. So I got a DOD position down in North Carolina. And that was an interesting experience. It was not what I was expecting. But as far as the military goes, I was miserable. Talk about getting stabbed in the back. You know, you're supposed to be this family, and you couldn't trust anybody. It was, this guy was out for, everyone was out for themselves. So anytime you turn around, you had like 10 knives in your back, and you didn't even know it.
Wow, was it just that part of the military? What would you call that? That branch?
So I was at Pope Air Force Base. They had shut down active duty, and they brought in a reserve unit there.
Okay.
To
save money, or what was going on with that?
Yeah, so they call it BRAC, Base Realignment and Closure. So they closed the active duty base, brought in a reserve unit. Yeah, to save money. It was a joint unit. So what their military is doing across the country is they're trying to consolidate. So if there's a guard unit, an Army guard unit, and a Navy guard or reserve units close by, they'll combine, and they'll drill at the same base. So they don't have resources. You know, you're not spending money on this property and that property. It's we got one property, the other one got sold off.
Well, yeah, it's smart. I mean, if you're, a taxpayer, you want your money being spent wisely. So right. it's not can't knock them for that. So
that's the mentality. So now there's a lot of joint force. Where we were different was reserves. So typically, active duty is in charge. Reserves are just an attachment. In this instance, reserves were in charge, and active duty was the attachment, which is at that point in time was pretty much unheard of. I think we were one of two units doing it. I mean, ours got closed down, but the other one isn't doing great either. And that's just the mentality. So in the reserves, you have a full-time force, which are DOD employees. And so they're civilian by trade. But they have this little clause in there for dual status employees. And they made us wear the uniform. So that caused a lot of strife because we were DOD employees, but we were wearing a uniform that we weren't technically, we weren't the rank that we were wearing, you know? Yeah. It's very confusing to a lot of people.
Yeah.
To actually just understand it. But so there was a lot of friction between active duty and us. You know, oh, you're a master sergeant, you're a tech sergeant, which is E6. You know, your supervisor. No, I'm just a WG-10, which is a wage grade employee. I don't have any supervisory roles. I can't discipline anybody. So, you know, there was those back and forth, those little nuances people were trying to get used to. And
I didn't understand a word you just said. Yeah.
No, I knew you would. Somebody out there will.
Awesome. Funny. Well, that's definitely so. How long did that last then? And
so that was 5 years, and now I moved. So that base was getting shut down, and so I moved up to New England, to Connecticut, to the Connecticut Air National Guard, where I was active duty for the last 4 years. Yeah, four and a half years.
So 5 years there, 4 years there. So what team do you support on Sunday morning, like tomorrow morning? Who will you be rooting for? And you also were in Western Pennsylvania for a while too, so.
So I always just say I was born into having to be a Steelers fan, so
yes,
kind of by default.
So that's
by
that's,
default, that's
Grandpa.
Yeah.
Born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, so Pittsburgh Steelers fans.
Panther fans would have taken you though.
What is that? Packers fan? Packers jersey you're holding up there, Amira?
No.
Oh yeah, no, Packers. No. Omar. Somebody gave this to me the other day. I'm like, I don't know what to do with this, but it's my colors, I guess.
Steelers. So she's working on a Steelers documentary.
Ah, it's all. Nah, that's fine. So Brian, when in that course of time you got married though, right? Because I think I know you a little bit. You got married.
That did happen. I got married.
That did happen.
Why the hell did you do that?
he beat me to the punch.
Yeah.
By 6 months.
You did go for long enough, and then right. I did beat you by 6 months. So I met my now wife in high school at RVA, Rift Valley Academy.
Those are some of the stories he didn't tell you.
So you were the one in the boiler room.
We're not going to disclose any of that information.
It was Africa. They didn't have a boiler room.
It was warm enough anyways. You didn't need a boiler room.
So you met your wife in Africa?
I did.
Oh, okay.
Chasing hyenas.
Gotcha.
I was chasing something. I don't know if I was chasing hyenas at that point. Like,
it was tail of some kind.
Certainly chasing tail, yeah.
Right.
Okay, wait, to preface, I really love Sheila. She's amazing.
Yes.
One of the best grafted in cousins ever. Could not. Man. Brian has found the queen of a wife. Just make sure that gets in there.
The Wellers are.
Yes.
Was she one of the queens of an Ethiopian village or something?
That was Sheila.
The queen of Sheila.
Oh.
That's a good pun. That's a good play on words there, though. I should use that sometime.
So anyway, so you guys are in the boiler room, chase and tail, and then...
Right. So, let's see. We started dating our junior year of high school. We got engaged our sophomore year of college. Yeah. I proposed... We went back for a reunion in high school, and I proposed there. Sunset, African mountainside, beautiful. Got married. I don't even know if it was 6 months later. We moved from Western PA down to North Carolina. That was interesting. That was probably the best thing that happened to us, was moving away from my immediate family who was in the States at the time. So
do you consider yourself an African American?
Or American African.
So I like to say, I tell African Americans, people of color all the time, that I said I'm more African than you are. And they laugh and we usually get along and
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, we kind of are. One time,
yeah. You know, like yeah. So yeah, I got married. I have three kids now. Course of that. We've been married 10 years. Yeah. 10 years just last June.
Yeah, we're coming up on it this December.
Yeah, next month.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations. Sounds like things worked out pretty well for you. So let me ask you guys this. I'm pretty curious. It sounds like you guys still have faith and you're still Christians. So how did your upbringing, being missionary kids, moving back and forth between schools, you know, Christian schools, private schools, charter schools, boarding schools, and all this stuff. And then, of course, having to come to the United States, see how Christians are here. How has that affected your faith?
That's a good question.
Well, I mean, it's definitely impacted my faith in a major way. I've never questioned whether or not God exists. And the reason for that is because he's proven himself quite a few times. You know, not yes. just through finances. My life has been on the line several times when we were kids. We lived out in a village and we were trying to do this immersive experience and I got sick and hallucinated and couldn't recognize my own mother. And it was a very scary thing. And the woman who was, we were in a hut. So the woman in the hut next to us heard my mom screaming and came in and just laid hands on me and prayed. And I don't remember a thing, but I was better the next day. And there was no, you know, that was Jesus. It had to have been. I know that growing up in high school, it was definitely hard for me to know where he was. I knew he was with other people. It was definitely clear. He was with other missionaries. We're Presbyterian, so I think he got bored with us. And I, you know, so like, I remember going through the motions, and by the time I was in my early 20s, I just remember being like, okay, well, if you're not here, I'm done. I can't deny you because I've seen you so much, but I don't think you like me, and I'm kind of over you too. But he showed up in a big way for me when I was 25. I really was in a place of need, and I can't deny the God who loves me, you know, and I know he loves me. And so that's who I follow. I follow Jesus and God the Father, you know, and I don't need religion. I don't need other people's opinions. I know who I love and who I believe in. I will always chase after that no matter where it is and who I'm looking for. So that's for me, it's the biggest thing. Like if he's not there, I'm not coming. So, yeah.
And that's true of me too. You know, when you put your faith in people, you'll always be disappointed every single time. And so, now there's a saying, the church in America is an inch wide and a mile deep. And the church in Africa is a mile wide and an inch deep. And to have both experiences, you put them together and you can see, you can follow God pretty easily if you open your eyes and look. But, you know, I think almost everyone in our family almost died at least once, probably more times if you actually sat back and thought about it. I don't know how many other times we have no idea that we could have died and didn't, but, yeah, life is valuable. Life is, it comes and goes pretty quick if you're not paying attention. And it's so fragile. It's amazing that any of us are here, honestly. I talked about coming to States and being depressed or being upset and lonely. I was extremely depressed for about 3 months. And in those 3 months, I didn't go to church because I was just fed up with people, Christians, and everything. And those 3 months were probably the most miserable months of my entire life. And when God said, hey, look, you need to go back. You might not agree with what they're saying, but you need to be around fellow believers. I did that. And
community. You
know, right. And that community really helps. Once again, I didn't agree with, I still don't agree with a lot of what they do, but you know,
so Brian,
how can you change if you don't ever, if you're not going to be the catalyst to help them change?
Right. You mentioned something and I kind of perked up because I had a similar experience. You said that like you died or nearly died at least once. You want to, you know, maybe tell us one of those stories? And I'll share mine real quick too. I don't know if any of the listeners have heard it.
The most prominent one that I remember almost dying was, once again, homeschooled. I was 8th grade because before I went to Bingham. It was a Friday. Mom said, you know what, we're going to be done with school for next week. Have a good week on vacation. Get back in the groove of things. I was folding laundry and my stomach started hurting. And I said, Mom, I got to go lay down. And I don't get sick very often. When I do, I get sick really bad. I just kind of hold it back. And then when I get a break, I just let it all out. And worst case scenarios usually always happen. But so I was laying in bed and my mom's a nurse by trade. I don't even know why she did this, because my mom's one of those suck it up and get over it kind of people. So surprisingly, she came in and said, does it hurt over here? And she poked on my left side. And no, not really. She poked on my right side. And it was really painful. She said, oh, we need to go to the doctor. So I climbed out of the top bunk and the government hospital was just on the other side of the fence. Used to be the old Mission Hospital. It was pretty run down. We knew one of the nurses. She went to our church, and so she let us in. She got us in there. And of course, in Ethiopia, nothing's clean. So there's rats the size of, you know, your house cat running around in there, and it was just dirty. Like, the whole place was dirty. So they're like, yeah, you know what? It's your appendix. We can't do the operation here. We don't have the facilities to do it. But they hooked me up on the IV, and so I pretty much spent the night there. Yeah, I spent the night there. My parents tried to go figure out transportation, and during that time, like, my mom and dad were praying the whole time. So they got a vehicle. We loaded it all up to go to the hospital, Mission Hospital, about 3 hours away, and we got in the truck. I don't even know how far we made it. We made it like 2 kilometers, I think, like a little less than a mile. And the car just died.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the truck, it was a Toyota Hilux. And so we had to go find another vehicle, and most of the vehicles were out. So the nearest one available was another 3 kilometers the other direction. So I don't know how they got the truck. They went over there, they got it. It came back 2 hours later. I think by the time everything was said and done, we packed it, drove 3 hours, you know, in Africa, or at least where we were, the roads were all weather roads. And 3 hours is, for us, was probably, I don't even know if it was 100 miles. So away, it maybe it was right around 100 miles.
You know. Yeah, right there on the bursting.
So, level. Right. And that's what the doctors at the Mission Hospital said. They said if I hadn't had the IV, it would have burst and I probably would have died. So, that was the closest I knowingly came to death.
Yeah, I bet that was terrifying too. After the truck's dying on your way, you know, it's thinking like, you know, how am I gonna get the hospital? I'm gonna die out here in the middle of nowhere.
I don't even know if I cared. I was just in so much pain; it just hurt so bad. Yeah.
I drowned when I was 2 years old. My grandmother found me floating face down. And so it's always been part of my story too. Like, of everything I've gone through and questioning everything, it's one of the things that, like, you know, like having that near death or death experience. Cause like they had called 911, pulled me out, tried to do resuscitation, you know, mouth to mouth, CPR, all the whole thing. And I guess I was non-responsive. And from the story being told, again, I was 2 years old, so I'm going off of what my grandmother told me, who was, like, there, that, like, that it wasn't until she, like, you know, screamed out the name of the Lord Jesus, you know, quote, unquote, that I opened up my eyes and started coughing up water. And so that obviously has been imprinted on me. And obviously, like, for years, there was some trauma involved, like when I'd be, like, falling asleep, I'd be like hold my breath in that like dream state, that going in and out or whatever. And so actually there was a reoccurring dream that I'd have where I'd be on like a merry-go-round or a, is it a merry-go-round where they have the horses that go fair? What is it called? With
carousel.
A carousel. Thank you. And I'd be on the carousel, and the music would be playing and stuff, and then it'd start going faster and faster and faster. And then I'd realize that, like, I'd wake up in a panic and not be breathing and stuff. And I didn't know until I was older that that's probably why I was doing it, because it was just kind of like reliving that trauma of, like, but yeah. So, I'm still in the, there's a God camp, but, it's been a great conversation. Before you leave, couple questions. Like, I want to know if you have any good Christmas stories to tell us, maybe while you're over there in Ethiopia or in boarding school or something along those lines, or you know, just what it's like if you guys like Christmas, you know, like away from everybody, like scattered, you know, like maybe in the recent years, like maybe like what's your best story, and maybe even be the same story. Then also, was there heavily any like demonic activity or anything? Did you see like any like witch doctor type stuff or any dark magic? You like, was there that level of Christianity, spiritual warfare stuff going on while you guys were over there? Is that something that like you grew up in? Yeah. So any stories, we'd love to hear them.
Well, like I said, we were Presbyterians, so that happened to the other missionaries. One that working.
who got that was more fun?
Barry. Yeah, I mean, I do actually remember wishing that I was with one of those other missionary groups, because they got the motorcycles and they got the cool stories, and we were just sitting here in the bush, just playing with dirt.
That's true.
Learning card games, probably, right?
Card games.
Oh, yeah. Which they couldn't do.
Yes.
I think for Christmas, I mean, we grew up in Ethiopia. They follow the Ethiopian Orthodox calendar, which means Christmas isn't really relevant until January. So we would do our own little family Christmas thing, and kind of try to get a day off where people weren't necessarily coming to do business with my parents. I remember trying to make it feel like Christmas in America, so we close all the curtains pretending like it wasn't sunny outside, it was supposed to be snowing, and hoping that your presents came from the hams, because they got the best presents.
That's awesome. Yep.
We would do like cousin exchange gifts, and we always knew who the good ones were. No offense to anybody.
Yeah, we didn't want to get them from Aunt Lisa, because that meant we weren't getting them that year.
And then we had to write thank you notes, which was even more tedious.
Yeah. Until Aunt Ellen put a stop to it.
Was that last year when you're finally most of us adults?
Yep. And so, her kids were learning to write.
Yeah. Let's see. Christmas stories. If you're gonna.
Yeah. Anything that sticks out. If not, it's okay. And then, you know, have you ever been, you know, possessed by a demon, or, you know, any stigmata action would definitely be a good story.
Signed up for that.
Yeah.
As far as Christmas goes, for me, you know, for a while, it takes a while to get used to coming back to cold weather when you're used to 85 degrees and it's sunny outside, or even 100 degrees some years, but
I don't imagine you guys had Christmas trees at all. You know,
oh, that was a good one.
Yeah, I was gonna say our first year we had basically a Charlie Brown Christmas tree. It was kind of pine. It was like Carolina pine, so it was really nice, thin, and yeah, there was nothing thick about it. But yeah, it was fun. We decorated it, and people asked us why we did that, and explained it a little bit, and yeah, that was our first year of Christmas.
After that, our Christmas, Dad didn't want to climb any more trees, so we went out and got a fake Christmas tree.
That's what, and we did.
It on the box is made by Al Qaeda, so it never blew up.
That's right.
But that was.
I forgot about
that's
that.
Amazing.
They made Christmas trees too.
Oh my gosh!
They do.
Well, they were in the Christmas tree business before they started blowing up business or building.
Maybe we just got a dud.
It wasn't spelled the same, but you definitely read it Al-Qaeda.
Wow. Wow.
It's like, thank you. Your money has bought this many guns. Yeah.
As far as spiritual warfare, though, I got to go out with Dad. What they would do, pastors, churches were far and few between. So people would come. It was like the old days here, 1700, where one pastor would have to ride his horse from point A to B, C, D, and E to go preach. So sermons weren't necessarily on Sunday. He had an area to cover, and that's what he did for his week, So they'd have spiritual conferences, as they called them, and that was usually right in between seasons, so it wasn't too much that people could get to it. But, I saw people exercised, and they to see that, it's amazing how accurate Hollywood can be sometimes.
See people like levitating and everything? You're seeing by like full on, not on the ground, all fours?
I saw this guy, he got bent in half. He was, I'm pretty sure he was off the ground, but he was not himself. Like the sounds and the noises coming out of him were not human.
How old were you when you saw that?
I was 13.
Dear God. I'm sorry. I'm so glad that my kids are not in church right now. Like, I mean, it's like,
but it was an interesting experience.
Yeah.
These people would there were people that couldn't walk that would walk, and it was interesting. It definitely wasn't set up. Like, you couldn't really set things up very well out there. You couldn't fake it like you can here. There were people who definitely couldn't walk, couldn't see. You could see their eyes were clouded over, and then they weren't. So, mm-hmm. I think that's one thing in the States we don't do well is the spiritual warfare. I think we're very complacent in that area.
Well, it's big pharma. Everything's medicine. You just, here's a pill. There's a pill for it. To block the symptoms or whatever, or do whatever. So,
right, it numbs the pain, so your body doesn't. Yeah, it's an interesting study to look at the devil and the hierarchy and where. Different, they have regions.
Where do you look at the devil at?
What was that?
So where do you look at the devil at? Is that over there where Amira's at?
Well, being up here in New England, actually, we're the most unreached people group in the U.S.
Yeah, Tom Brady, and he's he's an asshole. Yeah,
he couldn't possibly be. That's for sure.
I'm always hoping that some linebacker would reach him, each week, but.
I think we all pray for that one.
Yeah, those who pray.
That's right.
Well, guys, this has been a lot of fun. I don't know how you feel about it, but I've loved it. I loved having you guys on. Thanks for sharing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, our pleasure for sure. I don't know where we went. I'm not sure what I've said so far. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Definitely like shine some light on your experiences, in Ethiopia and the education system there. Then also just really this was like growing up with that, missionary experience too. That's been, right. And obviously everybody's experience is going to be different. And it's not going to say that you guys' experiences was like anybody else's, even listen to you guys' stories, like through school, like, just growing up in different regions and how, like, how information was brought to you, I guess,
Right. So. Yeah.
Love you guys. Mean it. Have a good evening. We normally, start a tradition where we, have the guests pray us out.
Good grandfather prayer for us.
Oh, man. Heavenly Father, thank you for this time together. Thank you that we can share our experiences and hopefully, in a sense, learn more about you and even learn more about us and who we are to you. Thank you for this time. Thank you that Omar and Elizabeth and Chris get together and do this. And you get to hear different stories, and it makes life a lot of fun. Different ideas. Thank you, God, for different experiences. Thank you that we're not all the same. Thank you that we come from different places and that we we can see your love differently through different scenarios. Be with all of us tonight as we go to bed. Give us the rest we need to prepare for the next day, for tomorrow. And bless everybody who was a part of this tonight. And thank you again for your love and for dying on the cross for our sins. And thank you for your love so much, God. Thank you that you have had a desire to create us and keep us around and be a witness for you. So, in Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Appreciate it, man.
Yep.
Appreciate that a lot. All right. Well, be well. May the force be with you. Live long and prosper.
Love you guys.
Don't eat yellow snow or brown snow cones.
All right. Well, I'm not even on this episode. It doesn't make any sense.
It's not that hard, mate. Just tell people that we're on Facebook and they want to add us on Marco Polo. They can do that. They can chat with us every day.
I don't see how that makes sense. Like, oh, this guy is telling us to come talk to him and do all this other stuff and they don't even know who I am. Why am I doing it? Why don't you get like
Whose fault's that, Heath?
People that listen to this like are going to be like, hey, let's. Omar wants to talk. Oh, Chris wants to talk. No one is going to try and talk to me. I do music. They're not going to talk to my guitar, so why am I doing the intro?
You need to start pulling your weight.
Wait a minute. Okay, do you remember that intro song? Like, I'm always doing the intro because I made that song, and then all the other songs you guys haven't used yet, you could be using those, and that could be my input. It could have been, and that's what I'm here for.
No one knows who you are. Your music just appears. Like, where's it coming from?
Have you ever been on an episode? Have you ever been on an episode?
I've been on two.
That's what I thought.
I'm pretty sure I've probably been on more than you now.
Yeah, I believe you. I believe every word you say. Just kidding. No, I don't. I don't think you've ever been on one.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.